Welcome back, everyone. This is Jovan bringing you episode, what is it now? 14 of The Secret Podcast. Shh. So, yeah, I gotta start keeping track of this stuff. It's, you know, before it was just episode 5 or 6. Now this is getting out of hand. So, in good fashion, I will start the episode with a fun fact. I started doing that, guest, 2 episodes ago. And now I'm just doing that all the time now, for whatever reason. The reason is I love facts and stuff like that. It's like, I don't know, scientific quips are always kind of fun. So, the fun fact for today, let me see if I can find a good one here. Okay, this is a good one. Tom Sawyer was the first novel written on a typewriter. So that really dates the novel. It's interesting, because for me, when I think of typewriters, I think of them existing back in the 1800s. Or I guess that's when it was written. I'm not sure of the timeline there, but yeah, that's crazy. Another fun fact, Nintendo was established in, I think, 1886 or 8. So, another thing. Yeah, the gaming system. But back then, they had Japanese baseball cards. So they were doing a different thing, but it was the exact same company. They also had Love Hotels, which... don't have to ask what they were doing with that, and a taxi service before they learned what arcades were and then created Donkey Kong and all that stuff. So, or Super Jumper Man or whatever it was called. But yeah. So there you go. You get 2 fun facts this episode. Anyway, so with me today is guest number 14. Guest 14, please say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And without any further ado, I'll just jump in with the first question. How is your day today?
My day was actually quite relaxing.
That's good.
Didn't have any particular goal for today, but I did a little bit of work outside, and I did a little bit of work inside, and I played a little bit of bridge online, and I watched a little.
What's
that game? That's a card game. It's a duplicate bridge, so it's one of my pastimes.
Okay. Because whenever I think of the old online games, I think of solitaire, but...
It's like that, but it's 4 people playing.
Oh, okay. So you're playing with people or just computers?
Yeah, people I have no idea who they are.
Oh, nice. That's cool. Nice. You could be secretly part of some sort of underground gambling system and not even know it.
That's right.
Like, do you have your own username and
yes, yeah,
all that nothing, reputation on there?
Nothing fancy. Just nice. Go on there. You can go on there for 5 minutes and go on there for 5 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, nice. That's like me with this game, Flow. It's not interactive, but it's just connecting dots, except you can't cross the lines.
Yes.
So it's essentially like looking at a knot and trying to find out how to untwist it. So, and I'm not much of a game app person, but that's the only one I play. Always got that on my phone. Not that this is like a shout out for that company or whatever, you know. If they want to pay me for advertising, by all means. All right, so not bad. So today was very relaxing. The weather was really good too.
Yeah, we've had fantastic weather this summer.
The only thing is just it constantly makes me worry, even though it shouldn't. It's like, oh, this is relaxing, but I can't live in the moment because I'm like, what's winter going to be like? What's next summer? Is it going to be too hot, you know?
Well, I think climate change has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, we should be okay, especially northern Ontario where it's like, or Edmonton. Is it Edmonton that snowed like 2 or 3 days ago?
Yeah, but I mean, right where we are in southern Ontario.
And we're doing okay.
Place to live in the world.
In the world?
In the world. In
oh,
the
wow.
World.
It's a bold statement, so we'll take it.
Well, nice. I mean, when you look at, you know, we have a stable government, so we don't have wars that are going on.
There's no typhoons like what's happening
There's
in Japan.
There's no extreme weather. You know, we might get the odd ice storm occasionally, or there might be the odd tornado, but it's very infrequent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We can go in any body of water and not have to worry about being eaten.
It's true, actually. That is something I never thought about, but Great Lakes, we're not going to get eaten by sharks. That's great.
There are no
alligators either.
Yeah, there are no poisonous snakes in this area where we live. It's very few poisonous insects. None are really life-threatening. So, you know, we should be feel blessed.
Yeah. The only bad thing we got going for us is just, tax evasion and stuff like that. Or, no, what is it? Insurance fraud. or something like that that happened maybe a year ago in the plaza right by my house. Someone bought a lighter at Max Milk back when it was Max Milk. So the security camera got him doing that. And then 3 minutes later, his store was on fire in the same plaza. And then they just, like, instantly, like, inside of the night that it happened and the cops came, they traced it back to him. And he was the business owner. Yeah, and it's like, got him. That's the, you know, obviously there are still real crimes that happen, but they're far and few between.
That's not nature. That's
place to live. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's crime rates, but nature and all that as well.
Climate.
Weather.
And the conditions on the ground here. We're pretty fortunate.
Yeah, they... last time I checked this was years ago, but on a rating website for Canada, for not just Ontario, but all of Canada, they said the best weather city-wise is Oakville. And then number three is Burlington. I don't know how it's a number three because it's right beside each other, but yeah, I mean, so it's not just you thinking that. That's, you know, there's apparently rates that go towards that. Yeah. So we're going to jump to the next question here. What do you do for work?
Well, I recently retired, so I was self-employed for the last 25 years, working in the pharmaceutical industry, and as of March of 2018, I essentially ran out of customers. I turned 65, so I decided, might as well retire.
Yeah, not bad. And you're not going to have to jump on welfare. I mean, the fact that you can retire is
not, that's
a lucky
not thing. Yet. No, I'm not saying that I would never work again. So far between the Canada old age pension and my CPP and some savings I had, we'll see how it goes. But
you don't live a lavish lifestyle. You don't need.
I've learned over the years that I don't need to. I think. You know, my income steadily dropped throughout the years. So I probably in 2017, I probably made a third of what I made 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's, and you find, I
didn't need it anyway.
Yeah. You know, so we don't go on a lot of trips or anything, but I was doing a lot of missions with my church. So I've cut back on that to a large extent.
It's unfortunate, but is there like a program you can set up for that, like a GoFundMe or something? Or that would happen.
I've been to
your weather
so many. I'd rather do fundraising for other people to go or for the projects themselves.
Okay.
So yeah, so I've been officially retired for about 6 months now.
Nice. Well, that's not bad. Living it up, and you see,
and I've never worked so hard in my life.
I guess. Yeah, when put on devices,
I've had so many.
Just
so many things, you know, volunteer things that I've been doing, plus a lot of work outside. So it's been that I never used to get to or put aside. So,
Well, that's great. And I assume you're finding your time more valuable doing that, or do you miss the pharmaceutical business?
No, I can't say I miss that. I didn't have anything. I enjoy what I'm doing right now. I do like to play duplicate bridge, so I try and do that three times a week. Nice. Although more recently it's been once or twice, just because of other things going on. But I'm content.
Yeah, you're doing good. That's great. And regarding the church work, where do you find yourself on that bridge? Is it Christian, Catholic?
Yeah, I go to Wellington Square United Church, which is a Protestant denomination.
Yeah.
I've been going there since about 2006.
Oh, okay, so you got a history there.
Yeah, I was never really, as a youth, I was, my parents or my mother took us to church, and I went to a Presbyterian church. But then once I turned a teenager, I had really no interest in the church at all for, you know, until I was in my 50s. So it was like there was a 35 or 40 year hiatus there. Yeah. So, but the church that I go to, I found that they weren't just about themselves. They were trying to help other people. They had a great outreach program. So that's what I've been more involved in over the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, honestly, that's probably the best thing that the organized church brings to the people around them, right? Is the community. I mean, it's amazing what you can do, right? I mean, I remember helping volunteer just at a house. Forget what even for. Were we cleaning up or remodeling or what?
That was through a lady at the church, and she had a minister that was moving in, moved from, I forget if she'd moved from out west or somewhere.
Yeah.
And they were renovating the house. And so I remember that was down in Vineland.
Imagine doing that, not being part of a church. You just wouldn't. You'd have to hire people. So community is a great thing. I think that's an undervalued thing in today's society. I mean, you know, the youth have always been the youth. They're always rebels, right? Yeah. But yeah, the sense of community, it's like, I don't know. It's
when you can get people to think a little bit outside of their own family, their own relatives, and their own immediate neighbors, and think about, you know, what can I do to help, you know, make Burlington a little bit better or the world a little bit better. You know, that's when things start to change.
That's like the dream of what politics should be. You know, instead of all the greed and all the drama, it's like the core idea behind it is that same thing. It's extended community, right? Whether you want to be a mayor or a premier or a prime minister, the whole point is because you are looking out for the commonwealth of every person, right?
Well, that should be the ideal. Whether that's the reason everyone gets into politics is another question.
Yeah, that's true. They get in it for the gold. A lot of
power.
Stuff on that. Yeah,
they get a touch of, they get a taste of the power, and then it goes to, what can I do to maintain my. I watch what's going on in the States quite a bit these days, and
it's extremely entertaining. Obviously it's bad and shouldn't be happening, like the divide, but you know, I've at least never looked into American politics.
When you have a system of government that when you have to spend virtually
all of your
one
time
out of every 2 days fundraising for your next election. That's you know,
doesn't make any sense.
The whole Constitution of the United States needs to be rewritten. They need to have another constitutional Congress 230 years after they had the first one, because the modern day doesn't work for them.
Yeah, thanks, Alexander Hamilton, but exactly. we need a new.
Americans will laud their system over everyone else, but you know, the ones that are and a little more circumspect, we'll see. Yeah, no. Having elected representatives every 2 years is probably not right. Not having term limits on senators or judges or things like that, you know, is...
But how would something like that be possible? Because when it was first happening, it was obviously everything was so much more fluid and, you know, like back when it was the birth of the nation, but... Now that it's been set, people would say, no, you're not allowed touching it, right? Like gun laws.
Well, that's not true either, because there is a
process. Would it be the Supreme Court?
There's a process called the amendment process. So
there is a thing. There you go.
The Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. The Constitution has been amended 26 or more times.
How recently, though? Was that all in the beginning?
Well,
it hasn't been touched in so long, so people are scared of doing
it. Well, probably the 25th Amendment is the one that I can recall, and that's the one that was formally put into place so that you can remove a president for if he's insane or is unable to perform the duties. Yeah. Now, it's only been used recently for when a president has had an operation and they've been going to be put under. You know, so that they're not conscious that the vice president takes over as acting president. But in theory, it was there that where, you know, if enough members of the cabinet and the vice president agree that the president is unfit for duty, then they can
see you later.
They can send a letter to Congress saying, we think that the 25th Amendment should be invoked. But when the Constitution was first and the U.S. and Constitution was first started, you know, slavery was still illegal.
Yeah.
Women didn't get to vote.
Yeah. So
there's all these things that have changed over, you know, equal rights, you know, due process, you know, there's all sorts of things that have been added since then. So there is a process, But the problem is
there's just so much time is being taken up on other things,
and there's too many the interests that that want to stifle any change are the ones that have all the money.
And, that's true.
And,
yeah,
and then you have the big thing where you just end up with so much apathy in the general population, or so much, frankly, ignorance that they don't really.
Yeah, ignorance is definitely
so. You know, when you have a population, and Canada is a much better, maybe even worse, where you know when you have elections and you know less than 50% of the electorate show up to vote. Well, what are you going to get? You know, so. And then, there's a lot of people that vote that have no clue. They just have, oh well, my father always voted for liberal, so I'm going to do that. Or you know, I'm going to vote conservative or NDP. So there's no critical thinking in a lot of votes, you know.
Yeah, so. It does surprise me how that works. It's because like we live in an unprecedented time technologically. Mm-hmm. We've never been this advanced before, right? It's just been progressing on. I forget what you call that, not a bell curve, but we've been progressing
exponentially,
yeah. And so the information is there. And it not just there, but it's like it can be accessed like in a way that's legible. But it's attention that takes people away from that, right? Where entertainment can take people away from that. And so people use that, whether it's in the campaigning process. With politics,
you can get all the information you need, but what's happened more recently is that can you trust the information that's being provided?
Yeah, misinformation.
So there's lots of fake websites, so you have to judiciously pick where you're going to get your news from. If you're just going to get it from Facebook or from your friends' feeds and stuff like that, it may not be the most reliable stuff.
Yeah. But what are you going to do?
Yeah. But we digress.
Yeah. No kidding. So, yeah, you're content with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
The times are changing, but we're okay otherwise.
I feel bad. I feel personally, I know I'm okay, but for kids your age or young adults your age and my sons, you know, it's a difficult time. When I grew up in probably the best time there was in the 60s and 70s in terms of opportunities. You know, you could go to university and be guaranteed you'd get a job if you graduated from our college. And these days it's almost been turned on its head where, you know, a lot of companies are not looking for university degrees. They're looking for what can you do? And so you need to still have some smarts, but, you know, a university degree or college degree is often used just as a winnowing process. Okay, well, there's so many people. Well, we'll say that, and then just to get, but it doesn't. So there's a lot of people that don't have degrees that don't even get looked at, but it doesn't mean they're not capable or qualified to do something.
Yeah, and what was I just going to say? No, I also lost it.
Well, in terms of the younger generation, they're going to be saddled with all the debt that we've been piling up over the years. So the deficits and the debt are, you know, it's like at some point there's going to be a collapse of some sort. And it's not going to be nice for, you know, I think I'm probably not going to be alive at that point in time. But with, you know, in Canada, for example, you know, the number of working people are supporting an aging population. So I am now drawing from the Canada Pension Plan. Now I did.
You're volunteering constantly.
I put money into that. So getting, in some ways I'm getting my own money back, but it's not just my money. It's like there's money. There has
to
be people.
And it's not just you. It can be people who have barely put anything into it. Yeah.
So the biggest problem that, you know, if you look at insurance actuaries in terms of, you know, when the Canada Pension Plan or the old age pension was instituted in 1964, that was, and so because there wasn't one before then.
Yeah.
So the average life, said when you retire at 65, you'll get a pension for the rest of your life. Now, what you don't realize is at that time, the average life expectancy for a male in Canada was 67.
It was 67?
67. So
they're like, it's fine. So you'll give me 2 years.
You routinely look at the obituaries in the paper, And it's most people are in their 90s.
Yeah.
So the system was designed with a workforce that, you know, that was only going to have to pay out for two to five years, let's say, you know. But now, and with retirees, they find that, well, they didn't save enough money to live for another 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, or 25 years, as the case may be. So, and we unfortunately, nobody, you know, stamps an expiry date on our forehead. So we know, okay, this is the date when I go bad, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And they go, okay.
So it's an imperfect science, you know. But
how could you predict for something like that? You know, it's, yeah, you can only do the best. But yeah, and I was going to say the expectation for how the economy ought to be is also was sort of flawed from the beginning, because the 1950s sort of changed everything with the Industrial Revolution that, like, promised jobs, and the economy was at a place where it was going nowhere but up because of the creation of jobs in factory businesses. So it was like the 70-year window of perfection, where it's like when you're 18, you leave school and you start a job and you can buy a house and start a family by the time you're 22, right? Where, yes. You know, I'm 25 and I'm not quite at that point.
Well, and the other thing that happened is that in the 50s, that the Second World War had ended in 1945. Yeah. And so many governments, Canada and the United States included, had a thing called, well, in the States it was called the GI Bill. And here it was like they provided money to returning veterans to go to school, to get a job, to get a house, and you know, when I was a kid, very few people most people would work for the same company for all their life. It was the economy was that stable and growing that fast that, you know, it was not uncommon for somebody to have spent 30, 35 years working for the same company. These days, that's a rarity. Yeah. Very few people, you know, regardless of their.
It's always static now. You know. Even
you're jumping from company to company to company.
Yeah. So.
And the companies themselves are either bought up or fold. There's so much acquisition amongst it. It's slowed down in recent years, but being in the pharmaceutical industry, I've gone through three mergers of the company that I started with, you know, I didn't survive the second one. So I was one of the ones that was cut, but that's how I ended up becoming self-employed, and was the best thing that ever happened to me. So,
so in the end it was a good thing, but you know, that's for other people.
Sometimes, you know, when I said I'm content for today, that's not necessarily a good thing. You know, there's a difference between contentment and complacency. So what happens is you can get complacent, and that's a danger
I've worked with people like that all the time, right? Where they, every single day, they hate their job that they walk into, and you're like, you've been here for 12 years, like, leave. And actually, keep this person's identity secret, but there is a guy at my work who's said that he's worked at the place that I'm working now for 11 years, and he hates it, and they don't know what they're doing, and yada, yada. So he's like not enjoying himself at all, but he's being complacent. And he went on a 2-week vacation where it was just him and his wife, and they went up to a cottage. So I can only imagine what you do for 2 weeks at a cottage, but, like, you know, I'm sure there was fishing and hiking and all that and conversation. And he comes back and ended up getting a different job. So he handed in his 2 weeks. And I'd like to think that I helped, like, encourage him, because most people there don't care about the next person kind of thing. But it's like, if you listen to someone say, like, do it, man, do it. Because for me, I've had, like, tons of jobs. So maybe I'm not the right person you should be talking to. If you say I want to leave, I'm like, yeah, leave. Well, but,
I guess,
you know.
I guess sometimes you don't want to say job. If you don't know
if he's going to be okay doing it, right?
That's right.
But he got another job, so it's good. He's not going to be, like, unemployed. But Yeah. So there's definitely a big difference. Would you, like, tier up that from, like, complacency, contentment, and then is happiness on top of that? Because some people say it's like the pursuit of happiness isn't realistic because it's not how the human brain works. Happiness is a moment by moment thing, whereas contentment is pure happiness. That's like lifetime happiness.
I think there's a distinction to be made between happiness and pleasure. And there's too much, too often we seek pleasure.
Gambling and drugs and all
that. We seek pleasure, which are usually short-term and sometimes destructive things. And whereas happiness really comes from within and usually in happiness, pleasure doesn't necessarily need to involve other people, but happiness does.
Yeah, so you have to be in relationship to a park for the day.
Yes,
stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, but you know, if you're addicted to gambling, you can go onto a computer and do online gambling all day long. Yeah. Nobody else has to be there.
The website will love it. They'll say, "Hey, come on."
It might give you some short term pleasure there, but then you got some,
Then you come off and you're like, "Well, that was definitely temporary."
Yeah, that's right.
Can't do that forever. That's true. It's a crazy life we're living. But you definitely are one of the people who has, like, always been, like, the most stable with your contentment that I've seen from the outside. So, I don't know. On the inside, you could be, like, jumping off the walls. But it's like, you know, for me, in the years that I've known you, however many years that's been, you've always just seemed like you got it going on. You got it all together. I don't know. Something about it. I don't know if there's a secret or if you don't even know. It's just good genes. Who knows?
I've never been. Okay. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I have never been a worrier.
Yeah.
So I see lots of people around me. My mother was always worried about stuff. My wife often worries about stuff. Yeah. And I've never really, I guess I've had enough self-esteem or I've seen what real poverty looks like. You know, I think most of the time people think in terms of, you know, well, what are we going to do if, you know, we don't have a, if you're not working, you don't have a job. And
there's just a blank void and that
fills them out. It's like, but there's always opportunities there. Like I said, I'm retired now, but if it turns out that, gee, we're not being able to make things meet. Well, guess what? We're living in a large house that we don't need to be living in such a large house. You know, if I have to rent an apartment, we'll rent an apartment. You know, it's not the end of the world. You know, if we currently have two cars. Well, if we had one car, that's fine. If we had no cars, well, there's a bike. You know, I don't have to go that far.
So that's like a perspective thing because
you can
get extremely attached to a house, especially if you've lived in it your whole life, right?
Yeah. So. And don't get me wrong. I enjoy a lot of the creature comforts I have, you know, my Bell 5 and, I've got probably four or five computers here, but it's like
you're very unclouded. Like you know, because that's a perspective thing to be able to see the world the way that you do like that. I mean, not a lot of people. You can only most people can only see what they currently have, right? Because it's like humanity's greedy, whatever. We always have that baseline of wanting more, so they look at what they have and then they just make that the ground level and say that's default. Even though they have it so good and don't even realize, right? That there's so much, that they could be so much lower and still be happy. So it's like a problem with perspective. But yeah, yours pretty locked down.
So I've been fairly easygoing. I don't get too wild and crazy or too, very seldom do I get ever, actually I can't remember.
You don't get blasted. Like when was the last time you got drunk?
Yeah, probably university. I can't remember. I'm sure.
Like a marriage. I'm sure. Right?
Since I've been married, I can't remember getting drunk since I've been married. And that's like 30 some odd years. So.
There you go. Don't give away your age.
Oh, okay. Well, easily.
It's too late. Yeah.
I was retired. I'm an old guy.
Yeah, but. Okay. So if you were to give any sort of words of wisdom regarding. That concept of the economy and worrying and stuff like that. I mean, what would be the one liner you would give if you could?
Well, I mean, everybody says, you know, work hard and keep your nose to the grindstone, but I mean, don't be afraid to if you have a vision or a dream, you know, don't be afraid to try it. Cause if it fails, guess what? You know, there's always something else to go back to. But if you never tried, you'll never know. Wow, what if I did that? It's like asking a girl to dance. You know,
you're too shy.
What's the word? That's exactly right. You know, I think when I was a long time ago, I was reading a book by an author named Zig Ziglar, who's kind of a motivational person, and this was for sales and stuff like that. And he kind of relayed the story of the Filter Queen vacuum sailor, the door-to-door vacuum cleaner sailor. I don't know. Yeah. They may not even exist anymore.
I think it's still a stereotype, though, because I've been there.
Yeah, or they used to, before the computers, there were encyclopedias that were sold door-to-door.
Yeah.
In fact, we bought one. But it was it's able to handle rejection without taking it personally. That's the biggest thing people can learn. Because when somebody says no to you, people take it personally too often. And really, it's just saying, no, I'm not interested in that product. So the Filter Queen example was the salesman that is successful knows that they're going to knock on 100 doors and they're only going to get two people that are going to buy out of 100. So that means that you don't know if that's going to be 99 and 100, or it's going to be number one and number two, or 47 and 88, you know. You have to keep, you know, and you can't get down if it's, you know, didn't happen that day, it'll happen the next day. So, you know, so that's perseverance and believing in yourself are probably the two biggest things that I can.
Yeah, because I would say I'm still young, still grown, right? I still got a big future ahead of me. Who knows? I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know, knock on wood. But
look, you're doing this, which is something most kids your age, keep calling you a kid. But
you only stop being a kid once I'm older than you. So that's how it works. Once I grow past you.
You know, you've always been somebody that I've known has always been trying different things. You know, sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't, but you're always trying. And this is obviously a passion of yours. So it's like,
I mean, I've been loving it so far. Honestly, it's like the whole idea of interviewing people has, like, I've never specifically tried that out or thought of that or experimented in that in any way until now. And like, I love it. Like, it's, you know, I obviously I got a lot of learning to do. Anybody who's been listening to this consistently, like all of my episodes, they've clearly noted a pattern. Like, I've noted a pattern. I definitely think that
you've been improving.
Yeah. Whether it's like curating certain questions, right? Like, you're not going to ask someone who's divorced, like, what's your marriage status? You know, it's, it's simple things where it's like, you have a list. And when you're starting off, obviously, you know nothing. So it's like, you know, go from the ground up. Yeah. But yeah, I think managing expectations would go along with perseverance too. And that's one of the bigger, like things that I've learned myself doing this is
that goes back to that vacuum cleaner. He knows what he knows his expectation is, and 98 people out of 100 are going to say no.
Yeah.
He just needs the two people and he'll be fine.
Yeah. And like looking on the bright side of that would be even if you sell zero in an entire day. So like, let's say you do 100 in a day. I mean, that's one heck of a day, but you go through 100 doors, you get zero sales. You're like the thought running through your head shouldn't be, I failed. It's like, you should always have, oh, well, I got tomorrow, or, oh, well, I got something else, right? Yeah. Like you, there should always be a positive thought to turn to. Yeah. There shouldn't be just, you do this and now nothing. And then you go home and you just sit there on the door and just do nothing. You know, it's like, you should be like, oh, well, at least, you know, that TV show's on that I like. Like, there should be always something positive. Yeah. So, hey, perseverance. I mean, that's, you know, I think everyone could learn from that. Stick-to-itiveness. Yeah, that's good. It's not bad. Yeah. And another one is the whole, nobody's against you. They're just for themselves. Right. Cause you don't know what someone else is thinking. So they say no to you and don't take it personally because it's not against you. It's just for themselves. So they're like, no, I don't want the vacuum cleaner. It's not a personal attack.
And most people are not going to do something like you said. So it's going to help you. It has to help them. So there has to be some benefit to them because they're not necessarily going to do it. Oh, you seem like a nice guy.
Yeah, you're trying to sell stuff. I'll help you out. It has to be. Oh, I actually need this.
Unless you're independently wealthy and can just, you know, I like the way the presentation this guy gave me. I don't need one, but I'm going to buy one anyways. You know, give it away to somebody else.
I did do that one time when I was in grade 10. Me and some classmates went to New York City to go see Broadway. Forget how much that was, only $119 for the trip and everything, right? So, you know, it's not bad. And I was given $50 for the 3 days that I was there. So it was like, you know, you just use it for food kind of thing or a souvenir if you want. That's what my parents told me. Because I didn't have a job at that time. I don't think I was legally allowed. I was still 14, 15. Right. And I'm walking the streets right at Times Square. So it's super populated. And I'm really young. This is before I had my growth spurt. So I wasn't 6 foot two. I was like 5 foot six. Like I was really short before I grew up physically. Right. And I'm just by myself at one point, like for 10 minutes, I'm just walking around and some huge guy comes over and he's like, "Hey man, like you got to buy my CD. It's the best thing you're ever going to hear." And he like went at it and clearly he's been doing it all day. Like you could tell it was scripted. Like he was probably like asleep behind his eyes. And he's like, "You got to buy the CD. This is the best CD you're ever going to buy. Like you're going to love this thing. Like it's purified. Like you're going to love it." And I'm like, I don't have that much money. Like how much is it?" He's like, $10. And I'm like look through it. And I'm like, "Here." And then he gave me the CD and I'm like, "What just happened?" Like I was so like taken back, but it was like I'd never been in a situation like that before. I think I'd only been in Toronto once or twice. So I wasn't used to the metropolitan lifestyle that there are people who do that constantly. I'm just used to a straightforward conversation. I wasn't used to like haggling or whatever you'd call that. Mm. And that's probably one of the only times that I just did something for someone else instead of myself, right? It's I listened to it. The first song was like the aces of spades and like the whole thing was just like that where there wasn't any substance to it. There was like a basic beat. So it was like beginning draft one. Yeah. But you know, yeah, it was a learning experience. So I did gain something more than just that CD. I'll say that. Yeah. But yeah, so that wasn't bad. So we are now almost 37 minutes in to the interview. So I think it's time for us to switch over to the opinion section, if you're ready.
Sure.
Okay, so I always ask this one, and I always get the same question, but there may be some variation, and one of my guests one day will definitely surprise me. That's the perseverance I'll hold on to. So I will start with, what is your opinion on guns? How do you view them?
I grew up on a farm, so I have used guns in the past, like rifles, 22. I don't have anything per se against guns, but I definitely do not think that it should be easy to get guns or to have guns.
Yeah, no psychological evaluation, no license even, right? Oh, you're 18?
Well, I mean, you're...
I don't know if it's that easy in America.
Yeah, it is. I have a brother who recently got a... his hunting license and so there was a lot of training involved, you know, how to handle guns, but even though he's had handled guns all his life, you know, shotguns and rifles, but to be legal and able to do it, you know, to shoot squirrels, sorry for all the
well, you know,
he has a farm so where we think of nice you know, bushy-tailed squirrels, he sees somebody just eating all of his soybeans, you know.
Yeah, so yeah, they're a menace.
Raccoons and squirrels and groundhogs are what he would call varmints.
Yeah, that's the enemy, right? Yeah. That's, yeah, makes sense.
So, yeah, so in terms of, you know, I don't think there's much need for anyone that lives in our area to have a gun.
Or, like, an automatic weapon.
Oh,
the concept of that doesn't make sense to me. That's a war machine. That shouldn't be used for safety.
I mean, this is part of the problem in the States is that they've, you know,
overproduced these guns. Now they're just selling them on the streets.
Well, I mean, there's only one product or only one manufacturer in the U.S. that cannot be sued their product cannot be sued, and that's the gun. The gun manufacturers. That's how powerful they've been. Wow. So they put in that step, you know, so well, like,
for themselves.
So if somebody shoots you with an AR-15, your family can't then sue the manufacturer of the AR-15 as being, you know, part of the problem.
Because, you know, if a table falls and someone kills them, you can sue them for making bad tables.
You can sue the manufacturer, you can sue the distributor,
guns are made to kill people. So if it kills someone, that's a terrible, disgusting thing. But that's the point. Like it's not made to.
There's so many.
It's made for people.
So many things that could make guns a lot safer to use. they have smart technology, so it can only
ID.
Only recognizes your ID, your biometrics, but that's something that they don't want to toil. It's a slippery slope argument. Well, if we do that, then the next thing we'll do this. We'll do this.
Yeah, there's no ending to it.
Meanwhile, they're the only country in the world that has mass shootings virtually every day.
Yeah,
30,000
statistics don't lie.
30,000 people in the United States will be killed by guns.
This year. Is like I'm not anti-gun. I'm just pro facts. I'm a man who looks at numbers. So you look at the statistics of England compared to America, and it's gross. Their cops got batons. You know, not many of them actually carry around guns.
That's right.
Just their military, I think. Right. Their policemen don't.
Yeah, they have special units that have guns, but they have to be called out. So the regular on the street, you know, Bobby or constable, police constable, just has a whistle and a club, and a
baton. Just fiddling that thing around, yeah.
And even when they are attacked by somebody with something a lot lethal, like with a machete or something, their first instinct isn't to kill that person. It's to subdue them or to de-escalate. And that's the problem that most of the law enforcement I don't want to make a generalization, but in Canada and in the States, it's the attitude is, well, I have to protect myself at all costs, you know,
so they could have a gun. Why could they have a gun? Because it's so easily accessible.
Yeah. They know they don't have a gun, that doesn't matter. Yeah, so the guy gives you a punch. That shouldn't be a killing offense.
No.
If he hits you in the chin with his fist, you know, does that mean you draw your weapon and shoot him to death? I don't think so. You know, I think it's just gotten out of hand, you know, so.
A bad situation, but that doesn't mean anti-gun. So the people who are going, hey, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, I think the divided section of it, you have to be on the side or that side. That's definitely the conversations that I've had with my guests so far have shown that most people are not like that, like an extreme.
No.
So far, right? I mean, obviously, I have yet to interview someone who's like, you know, pro whatever. Everybody so far is just a moderate.
Talking to mostly people in Canada, that's probably what you're going to find. You
know, unless I talk to politicians, then obviously they're going to be pro, whatever side they're on.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's too many politicians in Canada that are, advocating increase in the accessibility of guns to the general population.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly, like, to get a handgun in Canada is very, very difficult, you know.
And that's the number one killer, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It's not automatic.
That's right. I mean, we've had our share of mass shootings, but it's generally been it's not been every other week, and it's generally been with rifles,
because you can spray. Like, it's all about the people who they expect to die at the end of it, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's a terrible, unfortunate thing. But
yeah.
It's kind of scary. They don't kill people. People kill people, but people couldn't kill as many people, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
On to the next one.
Okay.
What is your opinion on, let's choose a good one here, ghosts?
Ghosts?
Do you believe in ghosts? Are they out there?
I can't say I believe in ghosts. I mean, I guess since I do go to church, I guess I'll have to believe in the Holy Ghost.
Yeah, but that's a different type of ghost. That was from 2,000 years ago. Different language.
Yeah, I
specters.
I am very science oriented. I mean, I'm not going to look at the Exorcist and think of, the devil, the ghosts. I don't necessarily believe those things.
Because all the cases are so, like, obviously mental health issues. Like, when you look at all of those super famous cases, like the Where was it? Where was the witch trials?
The Salem witch trials.
Yeah, that was clearly like someone had schizophrenia or there was some sort of mental health condition. Everyone started. It was just a mass panic in this city.
I wouldn't put the Salem witch trials in the same
category as individual exorcism.
So like, you know, the Blair Witch Project or something like where you see apparitions or there's some sort of haunted house or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's usually a rational explanation or it's
a house settling it could be anything. The drafts.
Yeah. There used to be a magician called the Amazing Randy who, he was kind of an escape artist, but the latter half of his life, he's deceased now, but he spent most of his time debunking the paranormal. So people that they first came out with the 900 numbers, you know, you could get your horoscope or fortune tellers, you know.
That stuff's still out there. I looked at a newspaper one time.
Yeah, and there's always that horoscope, but this is where they would charge you by the minute.
Television commercials.
So he would literally go to fortune tellers and they could
read it and then he would just.
But you see, he knew what they do, the clues they picked up on, you know.
Well, so would he misdirect them?
They could read a thing about him. They knew nothing. He wouldn't acknowledge when they said something was true or false.
Oh, because that's how they do it, right?
They see
yes or no.
Oh, well, there's someone in your life with the letter J. Oh, and so you think of somebody.
You help it along. Yeah. You con yourself because all they do is pick up on one.
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember my wife saying one time when she went to a fortune teller, and her line to the fortune teller was because they tried to tell her about you know how many children she had and this and that, and she said, "Listen, I already know what I know. Tell me what I don't know."
Yeah, the point is you got to tell me what I don't know. Yeah, I'm not gonna be amazed by you picking up on me.
That's right.
Yeah. That's true. That's good. On to the next one. What is your opinion on space travel?
Well, as a kid, I was a big science fiction reader and read all the Tom Swift books, a big Star Trek fan in the beginning. So
yeah,
I guess I, growing up as a teenager in the 60s, you know, the possibilities were endless. And now here we are in the almost 2020s. And
the Cold War never should have ended.
Well,
right? The motivator went away.
I was a teenager when they landed a person on the moon. The
moons. Did you see that live or just hear about it? Did you miss it?
No. I saw that. That was
67?
July 1st, 1969.
Nine.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would have been 16 years old.
16.
Wow. Yeah. So it would have been in summertime. So,
yeah.
But the shame of it is, you know, what's happened since then. So the states, the United States, nobody's been back to the moon, but nobody went back there for like 40 years, you know. But there has been some tremendous, and I think the idea of manned space travel has kind of gone by the wayside in light of computer technology and the ability of robots to do where it's much safer. It's a lot less expensive to do it. So there's been some tremendous
influence on the life to death ratio.
Well, I mean, you look at the Voyager. You know, I look at the Voyager, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. Yeah. So they set sail in 1979 or 78, I think. Maybe it was 77. But they've traveled over a billion miles. They're actually the first objects
interstellar space, outside of the solar system.
Exactly, into interstellar space. So, and at the time, that they were there, the computing power of the Voyager 1 is less than you would find in a little hand calculator.
Yeah, something like super small.
So it was an amazing achievement, and they're still going, and it's still transmitting to this day. So. But the vastness of space is just the big
It's the biggest issue, right? This isn't the same as the ocean. It's not like, oh, if we travel for 2 months.
It's for the human mind to comprehend the vastness of space is just, you know, it's very difficult for us to do that. You know, when it takes light years, so the light traveling at 386,000 miles per second. And so times the number of seconds in a year, that's how far you travel. And that's just to get to one light. Well, the closest, is 4.5 light years away. And that's, you know, so that's
10,000 years or something. Well, like, yeah. That's not going
to
happen.
Well, you know, unless you can travel close to the speed of light. So warp drive and,
they're saying
wormholes and stuff like that. I mean, it's all science fiction. So I think it's
entirely possible, just not in our lifetime. Like, well, if we did it right now,
here's the kicker. The way the human race is going right now, we better take better care of our planet, or we won't have the resources to even get off of this planet in the future. So, I mean, as to the best of our knowledge, this is the only inhabitable planet in the world, in the universe. You know, you would think there would be some other ones. You know, there's a famous equation called the Drake equation, which kind of what is the likelihood of intelligent life existing somewhere else in the universe? You know, if you're a creationist and you believe in God, then you have to believe that everybody.
The Adam and Eve story is it for life, because instead of life
life was created by a super and omnipotent being. But you know, I'm even though I have I go to church,
it's not the same as being
I'm not wedded to, like, okay, there's one God and he's omnipotent, knows all, and everything in your life is preordained. I don't believe that. You have a big impact in it.
Plus, also, this is a total side thing that nobody thinks about. One, the Earth is completely misplaced if it's supposed to be the center of the universe, right? Because it's off in the corner of the galaxy, and the galaxy is off in a filament of a supercluster. So not the center of the universe. And two, if God is omniscient, which is all entirely possible, right? Because this is getting into the metaphysics, which is stuff that can't be proved or disproved. But if he is omniscient, that means that he is witnessing the thoughts of all of us. And that includes, like, psychopaths and, like, pedophiles and stuff. So you got to feel bad for the guy. Every second of the day, he's experiencing all the fantasies by all the craziest human beings in the world. And that's supposed to be where our moral compass comes from. So he's as disgusted as any good person.
Well, as a Protestant, there's the Bible. I read the Bible, and there's a New Testament and there's an Old Testament. And so I asked some religious leaders to say, well, okay, so if God is omnipotent, okay, why did he have to do a reboot and bring Jesus? You know, he could have had it right at the beginning, you know, like, so
it's a great story. That's the thing to glean from it. Right. They say most good stories nowadays are good because they use the Jesus archetype of the hero and the sacrifice and all that kind of stuff. It's
the least likely hero in the least likely circumstances. So, you know, if you're going to, you know, and that's why, the Jewish faith still doesn't think the Messiah has come, because they think it should be somebody
who's more human. So like,
it's like a king and a warrior that's come, not some carpenter's son.
Yeah, because that's like the older tales, like I forget which the oldest tale is, but it's like, I think somewhere in India, that is the oldest written story. And it's about this guy who wants to live forever. And he's this king, and he's like 7 feet tall, and he's jacked, and he's indestructible. Like, any of his enemies are easily wiped out, literally has no challenges his whole life. He finds like a goddess and lays with her in bed. Like, everything just works out for him. And then in the end, he finds the immortality and then has it. And then he's like the best. And the only challenge is that he had to spend time finding it. But like, that used to be stories. There was zero challenge. And when you think of a story now, you think anyone who writes a story where there aren't challenges that happen to the protagonist, that's like the worst story you could possibly come up with.
Well, it's like when...
stories have come along.
It's when Superman was first created.
Oh, yeah, he's Wonder Bread nowadays. Nobody likes
the problem Well, the problem was is that he was invincible. He was.
So how do you make a?
So they had to come up with.
Nobody's got to save Lois Lane.
They had to come up with. Kryptonite. They had to come up with green kryptonite in order to have a weakness. Otherwise, you know. Well, so he can.
What happens? You know, the greatest.
He's always going to win. And he just comes in. Unlike a Batman character, where he has no superpowers, he just has skills.
Yeah,
and he's technology. Got
gadgets. gadgets and detective capabilities.
Yeah.
And he knows kung fu.
Right.
That's all he's got going for him. That's all great stuff.
So space travel. Yeah. Do not.
You don't think
if we put all our eggs thinking that space travel is going to happen. Well, space travel is happening. It's just not.
At the rate not far.
It's not interstellar space. It's just. Like, the fact that we have. You know, a telescope, the Hubble, I mean, that's given tremendous window onto the world, as they said when they launched it. But, this web telescope that they're going to be putting up next is going to be even larger. And
see past the universe. No, that's not possible. Well, you know about redshift?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
so it's not going
to
happen.
To me, it's amazing that if you believe in evolution, which I do, the fact that we as humans today can look back. So when you think about it, you know, if life evolved spontaneously from some
lightning in a soup bowl or whatever.
Well, you know, from some bacteria or in the ocean that, you know, form and it's
the proton. Yeah. Starts as a proton, becomes the nuclei, and then you get the single cell organism. And from there, it was just a fever dream. Like everything was being created all at once. Started eating each other, and that was that's what created evolution, I think.
But there was there has to be a spark of life somehow. Okay, but the biggest thing the biggest thing that is you have to be able to replicate yourself. So the creation of DNA, whether it's and everything has DNA and the ability to reproduce and duplicate yourself, you know, so bacteria can do that, you know, every 4 minutes, you know, they can, you know, they.
Someone sneezes and out they go, those little spores.
Well, but they multiply themselves, they divide, so they're doing, so they're doing that all the time. But then single cell grouping together for a common purpose, you know, like the fact that that happened is amazing. I mean, you think there must be a God, because how could that happen? You know, but
when you think of the concept, because there are certain relationships that plants and animals have with each other that looks like it's planned. It looks like it was created knowingly, right? Like, what is it? There are certain,
There's relationships between insects and flowers that one can't survive without the other. They're only pollinated by this one species of bee, and this bee can only feed off the pollen of this. You know, how do they evolve together?
I think this is definitely a scale problem, because we can't imagine millions of years and slow processes.
Yeah,
but yeah, because I have a hard time imagining how any of that could be done without it being intentional. And like there are situations where in Toronto, there was recently this flower that only comes to life like once every 60 years. And it just happened, and it's called the rotting corpse flower. And it smells like a rotting corpse. Yeah, so it's people find it fascinating because of that, but obviously it's gross. But the way that it works is there's a male and female plant, which is super rare for plants to have that, where the female plant flowers first. And then it needs an insect to walk around in it, gather its pollen. It then dies. And then the bee is because there's only certain animals that are attracted to that scent of a rotting corpse. So they have a specific insect that's attracted to it, goes there, grabs the pollen, female flower dies. And when it dies, it does a sort of motion that forces the insect to go out. But like the petals are aimed towards where the male flower is going to be before it's even cropped up. And how do you plant something like that? I don't know. These are plants. Like, how there's no intelligence involved, and yet it's doing something so elaborate. Yeah,
there's a plant called the century plant.
It's
that flowers once, it may be the same.
And cicadas too, where they're once every 17 years and they're underground.
Well, there's 17-year cicadas, there's 11-year cicadas, and there's 13-year cicadas. So Yeah. Every
adapted to whatever specific area.
Yeah. You're living, so right? You have. So if you do the math and you multiply 11 by 13, but you can tell that there's going to be every 248 years, there's going to be a generation. All three generations are going to come out at the same time. So you get these.
I don't want to cut you off there, but we are an hour into it.
Oh, okay.
As we say goodbye. Yeah, we got a bit lost there.
Wow.
I'd love to have you back on, or even collab with maybe one of the other guests.
Yes.
4 or 5 that I had on. So.
And they'll tell you what I'm really like.
No, but it'll just be fun. You know, I like the idea of like mixing the people together who I talked to earlier, sure. And like, you know, because it can create really interesting conversations. So thanks for coming on.
Be happy to, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
There you go.